Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast, the last one of the regular season. And that is not to imply that there is a postseason in the Padres' immediate future, but to say we will sporadically throughout the offseason, certainly early, and then as a manager search goes on, managers hired, offseason moves, that sort of thing. Jay Posner and I will be back. I am Kevin Acey, the Padres beat writer. I am in Phoenix for a three-game series that evidently the schedule requires that these two teams, the Padres and Diamondbacks, play. My boss, sports editor of the Union Tribune, Jay Posner. Jay, I guess we're here where we don't need to talk about this series so much as where the Padres are and where they might go. I wonder, since I always defer to you and your wisdom, where should we start?
Well, that's a pretty good idea. I think we should start with the idea that there was really no way to just cancel this weekend and save you a flight and three nights in a hotel and all that stuff. I guess it's your last chance to enjoy room service for the weekend. So enjoy that, and I guess you'll have to pay attention at least a little bit to the games, and then I would say you would be in a vast minority of even Padre followers that would you would really, really have to be hardcore to be watching this weekend, I would think.
Or infirm. And if you are, good luck to you. And I hope that Eric Lauer's uptick in velocity is enough to give you just a little lift tonight. And then Garrett Richards closing out his season, such as it is, mm-hmm. which is a springboard to next season. And I don't mind starting there with the rotation. I'm sitting down to write this this position-by-position assessment of the Padres, where they're at, where they might be. And I'm in the paper this week, on Sunday, Bryce Miller will have a column talking about Jay, I don't want to give you a spoiler, but it is how far away the Padres are from the Dodgers, who everyone is chasing. And then I'm going to have this look. And next week, we'll have some more things looking back on the season and obviously paying it forward. I am starting, I go position-by-position, and I go, you know, how it is, 1, 2, 3. So okay. I'm starting with the pitchers.
Okay.
And honestly, I think I was about to write a line something like, you know, this is where the Padres have the most optimism that they can make the biggest leap. They believe they closed a gap with certain starting pitchers, as in the ones that are going to be back for sure. Denelson Lamet, Chris Paddock, Garrett Richards next year. They like that as their top three. They're going to try and add someone else and make that a top four, which in my opinion would be pretty, you know, that'd be not anything to where we could go, oh no, this team isn't a contender. You know, where in years past we've said, oh man, that pitching, that's a big if. If they had those three guys and someone else, Weaver from the Mets, Syndergaard, who I do believe they'll make another run at, man, that would be pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I would say at that point, I'm not sure I would be ready to declare them a contender, but what I would say is the reason that they would not be contenders would not be the rotation. And this year, that was definitely almost the prime reason when they went into the mm-hmm. season why you would say, and I said all along that this team was not going to contend and was not going to be better than, could nowhere near be better than 500 because of the rotation. Next year is completely different, with the obvious caveat that you're counting on guys who have been hurt in the past, but mm-hmm. that doesn't mean they're going to get hurt again. I mean, Lamet has shown very well over half a season. Paddock obviously went through an entire season this year, and Garrett Richards, I guess if there was any reason to pay attention this weekend, it would be Richards' start tomorrow night. And I like his, it's funny to watch him, especially that start in Milwaukee, the competitiveness that mm-hmm. he showed and how upset he was after, you know, getting beat by Corey Spangenberg, of all people. But again, if you have those three guys, and even if those were your top three, I don't think that would be terrible, but it would be better for the Padres, obviously, to add another sort of top of the rotation guy. Yeah, and then you're talking about four guys that all have great ability, have shown that they can get it done at this level. You still would expect improvement from Paddock, obviously. You'd expect improvement from Lamet. And then you'd have, you know, as far as a fifth spot or guys that would be fill-ins when the inevitable injuries happen, because you're not going to have five guys, you know, all make 32 starts or whatever it would need to be. And then you'd have, you know, depending on trades, but possibility of guys like Lucchesi and Lauer and Quantrill, and I'm sure I'm even forgetting a couple others, yeah. Jacob Nix. I mean, you know, any number, yeah. Michel Baez, who knows what the plans are for him. I mean, some of those guys I'm sure are going to get or not all these people we're talking about are going to be on the roster next year. But yeah, I would say the rotation as structured with those three guys and then the other guys I mentioned at the back end would be, you know, one of the team's strengths. And add a Syndergaard or a Wheeler or whoever you want off another team. And sure, that's a pretty good place to start for a team that, you know, I think time's up. I mean, we could say this, time's up in terms of the rebuild. You know, they need to contend in 2020. I think the fans, most of the fan base is rightly tired of hearing about, you know, next year. And this is not to say they're going to win the West next year, because they're not. At least, I certainly wouldn't predict them to beat the Dodgers anytime soon. But that doesn't mean they can't contend for a wild card and can't be relevant throughout the season and have a win total, you know, that starts with an 8 instead of a 7 or 6, which we've seen for so long. So
I think the simplest way to put it, Jay, and thank you for gently correcting me, Wheeler, not Weaver. I had Weaver on the brain for reasons that aren't important. Anyway, here, the easiest way to say what the improvement would be is you'd be flipping the rotation. Your number 5 starter is going to be maybe this year's opening day starter, you know.
Correct.
Eric Lauer.
Right.
Or now, they knew going in that Chris Paddock was going to be their best, you know, consistent guy, full season starter.
But they weren't sure how he was going to hold up
right,
over a full season.
Right. So your top of your rotation was Lucchesi and Lauer, and one of those guys is going to be, if things go according to plan, and you know it's easier said than done when you're trying to add a top of the rotation pitcher, but that's going to be the bottom of the rotation now. And you know what? That's important. If your guy who is your number 4 or 5 is going 10-10 and is giving you 160 innings like a Lucchesi, you might be a pretty good team.
If that's your number one guy, right?
Eh.
Right. I mean, Lucchesi finished with an ERA just over 4, knocked that down by, I don't know, a third of a run, a half a run, something like that. And things look different. And especially if, as you said, if he's your number 5 starter next year. And again, he might not even be that. I mean, Cal Quantrill showed very well for a couple mm-hmm. months right after the break. So there's going to be, hey, if you're going to have a competition for one spot in the rotation, and it's going to be Lucchesi and Lauer and Quantrill and, as I said, maybe a Jacob Nix or somebody else off of the minors or something. That's a good spot to be in. That's a lot different than this year, where basically almost every game was started by someone who was in either their first or second year in the big leagues. And you know, the one, maybe the exception was a guy like Garrett Richards, who, you know, for all intents and purposes, is kind of starting over. It's not like, oh, we have this veteran who made a bunch of starts for us. So,
yeah, I think the rotation count.
Yeah, I think the rotation obviously should be much, much better next mm-hmm. year, and that's a really good place to start. Now, what about the bullpen? Kirby Yates has 1 year left under team control.
So they'll try to buy out the arbitration. And when I say try, you know, that's what they'd like. They have to come to an agreement with Kirby Yates, maybe get a 2-year deal. I would imagine his side would push for 3, right?
Right.
And then that's how it goes. And we'll see. I do believe that, you know, Kirby absolutely meant what he told me last week, which was, you know, the team's ability to contend in his eyes will play a part, but also Kirby Yates will be 33. He's, you know, fairly realistic about things. These guys retire at 35. You figure you got another 35 or 40 years on earth. If the Padres make him a nice offer, Kirby is going to be a Padre. This is what I see over knowing Kirby a little bit and then, you know, over the years. That's what it comes down to. Plus, he is excited about things that he sees here. Kirby Yates, Andrés Muñoz, bet the farm. Matt Strom, if you want to bet the farm, go ahead. He's a very important, versatile piece that can mm-hmm. be really excellent for them. But he also could be a trade piece, okay?
Right.
So, you know, but Andrés Muñoz, you have the 8th and 9th inning locked down is what you're thinking right now. Everything else in that bullpen, open, man. And what they missed this year when Aaron Loop got hurt, when Jose Castillo got hurt, they need to find veterans. Now, Craig Stammen, I don't know. There are signs he's not going to be back. There's also a really good argument. Craig Stammen could be a mop-up guy. He could be a sixth-inning guy, seventh-inning guy. He could be a very capable eighth-inning guy if Andres Munoz went on the IL or was unavailable, having pitched, you know, 3 days in a row.
Right.
But if it's not Craig Stammen, they can't just be like, oh, Trey Wingen or Gerardo Reyes, yes, David Bednar. Hey, by the way, I would put David Bednar just under Matt Strom in terms of that guy's going to be here, all right? But they have three, four spots, at least three, where one's going to be a veteran, and then, you know what, these young guys, we'll have to see. Is it Trey Wingener is not what a lot of people think he is. He's a rookie, all right, and he's been very good. Gerardo Reyes can't throw strikes. I don't know. I think the Padres have lost a lot of, belief right there. I don't know who I'm leaving out, Jay.
Well, I think that's a lot of areas where, you're not, you know, guys like Perdomo, Robbie Erlen was always the forgotten guy back there, usually by me. But
Perdomo's an interesting piece.
Yeah, but I think the guys, again, we don't know who's going to be around. We don't know who's going to be traded. I wouldn't be floored if Kirby Yates was traded. Just, you know, at some point, maybe not at the start of the season, but during the season. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm not even saying it's likely. But I don't think there's a lot that would surprise me right now in terms of who the Padres are willing to deal. You know, you can't just say we're going to keep all our good pieces and try to trade away, Luis Perdomo and Trey Wingenter and get back a starting outfielder or something like that.
Nope.
You know, the same thing with we can move on to the catchers. Look, any of those guys could be trade bait, but what are you going to – you know, it was funny. A guy across from me at the game the other night asked me, Hedges or Mejio, you know, which one would you trade? And I said, how much are you going to get for either one?
I will say this. There is a trade market for Austin Hedges.
There's a trade market for him, but what is that?
It's pretty good if he's packaged. That's my understanding.
Because
his defense is just off the charts. And just like the Padres have always said, if we didn't have four holes in the lineup, we could afford to carry Austin Hedges because he's that valuable defensively as a leader, as a handler of the pitching staff. Austin Hedges is absolutely gigantic trade bait. He also is a guy who could be around if they can fix the other, you know, problems in their lineup, which I guess you could say about a whole bunch of guys.
Well, I mean, can they go into a season with Mejia and Hedges as the catchers again?
I just don't think that they think they can.
Okay.
Now, what's the solution there? Because, you know, if Mejia goes to another team, that team's probably moving him to the outfield.
Right, right.
Because that's what everyone, except the Padres, seem to think Mejia is.
And I'm not convinced.
Maybe
convinced
the Padres will.
And I'm not even convinced that he's, and I guess, you know, we haven't seen it. We saw it for a stretch this year where he got hot and hit. But I'm still not convinced that he's going to be, how good he's going to be as a major league hitter.
Okay, well, he had a 320 on base percentage, and I mean, I forget what the OPS, but it was okay.
Right, that's what I mean. It was okay and showed signs, but I'm just not convinced. It doesn't mean it can't happen. And
right.
given if he could stay healthy and get 400 or 500 at bats in a season, I guess we would find out. Unfortunately, we weren't able to find that out this year. So it's definitely a risk to go forward with those two guys. And I don't know what they make of Austin Allens or Luis Torrens or, I mean, Camposano wouldn't be ready yet. But, you know, that's another guy that could – any of those guys could be part of a trade package. There might be a team that loves Camposano after the improvement he showed this year down in the minors. So
there's a couple teams that over the past couple years have shown interest in Austin Hedges, the Astros, the Rays. Well, those teams could probably fit Austin Hedges into their lineup and absorb him.
Oh, no question. I mean, he could work in a lineup like the Astros. You know, he could work in a lineup like the Dodgers. I mean, I'm not saying they need him. I mean, they've got Will Smith as a young guy. So,
much better would he make Verlander, Cole, and Greinke? Wow.
Right, right. So, I mean, there are lineups that are good enough, you know, to absorb someone like Hedges. I'm just, as we said, not sure this is one. We go on to first base. Eric Hosmer was better this year offensively, at least until recently. So I don't know how much better his final numbers are going to look. He's still not been quite the offensive player that we saw a couple times in Kansas City. I thought his defense this year was mediocre at best. Made a few decent plays, but I would expect better. I've never had much respect for the Gold Glove awards, and I have even less respect for them after seeing that Hosmer has won four of them. Now maybe he was really that good before, but I've seen a lot of first basemen come through here that have been a lot better than him. That didn't win Gold Gloves. So, but hey, he's the Padres' first baseman. I mean, he's not. That's the commitment they made a couple of years ago, and I don't think there's anything that's going to change that. Do you?
No, I don't even think that with all that we have to talk about, he's the guy. We can debate it, and we probably will, right? Because there's lots of time left to do it. But that's your first baseman. Let's move on to second base, where. Is it that important of a position? Well, that's something the Padres have to decide, because the shine is off Luis Urias. That's a decent guy that, again, another one, and I don't think it'll be the last time I say it here or again, is they could absorb Luis Urias. He needs to make some changes in his swing. Everyone has noted that. And his weaknesses are obvious. He is a much better second baseman than shortstop, but he is a guy who can, when you need to give rest, outside of the yips he had there for about a week, he's a guy who can give, Fernando Tatis Jr. a spell. But do they want better there? They certainly do want better there with their need in the outfield and at pitcher and possibly at catcher. Will they decide that, we're going to go with Luis Urias? That I don't know. But there are definite, this is not your second baseman of the future that is going to be hitting second in your lineup.
No, but to me, that's a relatively low priority for this team. Would you agree, based on everything else you just mentioned? I think that they can afford to go into a season with him, and then, even if you stayed with a Garcia or a France as your second, as your utility guy, I thought Urias was fine at shortstop. I mean, he did have that one week where, he made, I think it was like five errors in eight games or something. Didn't look good at all, but looked, I was there yesterday, thought he had a really good game at shortstop. As a backup, I think he'd be fine there. And if he's your starting second baseman, I don't think it's the end of the world, as long as you have improved the positions that we are identifying as much higher priorities. That's kind of where I am on that. Yes. But I think they can live with that and live with him, batting seventh or eighth in the lineup and playing solid defense at second and being a good. A good backup for Tatis, who's never, you're never going to have Tatis play 162 games. Yes. I mean, he's always going to have something that's going to cause him to miss a few games. So they can live with Urias. Is the thing that would concern me a little bit about some of the other guys in the minors is that here's a guy who was considered like the Padres' number two prospect, where like guys like Gore and Tatis have been number one, Urias was two or three, and he's come up and you're thinking, wow, if this guy's number two or three, can we count much on the guys below him? So that's just, we don't have the time to get into that too much today, right. But that's a little bit of something that was sort of in the back of my head that I wanted to mention.
Absolutely. And the Padres, I don't know that the Padres, and I tried to mention this several times, I don't know, the Padres had him as high as everybody else did, and they've been getting on him about the swing forever. And finally, it's like, well, great, come on up and we'll see. How's that going to play here? And he's making some little changes. There's a difference of opinion in the organization as to what you do with Urias and how much you can live with him. There's one more thing I want to say is that I believe that if the Padres, and I know that this is coming from other players, this is not me because I'm not important, this is coming from other players. If the Padres believe that they are contenders in 2020, mm-hmm. Not what you and I believe, but the Padres do.
Right.
Greg Garcia is on the roster. That's, is that a make or break? No. But Greg Garcia is a really good player to have on your roster.
Yeah, I wouldn't dispute that at all. I thought he did well this year in the role that he was asked to play. You know, he did well on a
They don't have guys like that.
Right.
I mean, it's who are you asking to go up? And now this is relative. I mean, and you wouldn't say this on a playoff team, likely. But on the Padres, if you've got a guy on second or third base and you need a hit, who are you sending up?
Yeah, I mean,
Greg Garcia is probably my vote.
And, well, that that wouldn't be good considering they committed over $500 million to three players that you
that's
would.
What, no, you, but just saying that, that's all I'm saying is, you know, that we don't need to get into the bad stuff that says. That's simply my compliment to Greg Garcia.
Look, he had, I think his WAR's at 1.4 right now. His adjusted OPS is just below 100, you know, which is league average.
Is OPS plus, is that or adjusted OPS, is that, that's a counting stat, right? I mean, here's a guy who played fewer than 100 games.
No, that's relative to what that's relative to what he played. So, but he was fine. I mean, his slugging percentage, but look, he has a 367 on base percentage. How many Padres can say that?
That's what I'm saying.
That's the thing. He goes up there, he gets on base. He has an idea. He can play deep. He can play. He's not awful defensively. He's not good, but he's gotten better. He's serviceable. Look, he had a career high this year. It's the first time. He's over 300 at bats this year. He had never had even 300 plate appearances in the big leagues, and he held up. And look, you know, he wants to be here as a local guy. He's 30 years old. I would heartily endorse having Greg Garcia on a team as a utility player.
That's so good. I'm glad you said it. I don't need to go in and justify what I've said. That's it.
Yep.
A utility player. All right. Shortstop, Jay.
If you're going to stay with the 1-2-3, we'll go with Machado.
Same thing as Hosmer, but we should probably spend a little more time since it was $300 million and it was his first year.
Right. And I would say that for 4 months, I thought he was he was what he was supposed to be. Maybe just slightly less power than I would have maybe thought, but the numbers, you know, through the first couple days of August were very good and certainly something. And when you combine it with his defense, and I thought that he was basically a model citizen. You didn't hear a whole lot about, you know, issues coming up, certainly not on the field. I thought for 4 months he was what we thought we were getting. We meaning fans and people watching the team. Not that I'm ever would say I'm part of the team or even want to be, just to put that there. But the last 2 months, and I forget the numbers that I sent you yesterday, but he was terrible in August and after the first couple of days of August, and he was even worse in September. And I guess what do we read into that?
I think that in the organization, it was wholly predictable that if they were out of it, this is what they could have gotten. Mm-hmm. Will they expect more? Do they hope that the next manager, will they demand that the next manager, and when I say demand, they will get a guy who comes in and says this was unacceptable. That, you know, they know who Manny is. That'd be, you know, to expect him to be leader and the bastion, the pillar of society. I'm not bashing him. I'm saying he is what he is. He's an amazingly gifted player. But there is a certain amount of respect you have to have for the team and the game, and you have to carry that out as long as you can. And there was disappointment in the organization of what happened in the last couple months. Manny Machado is the kind of guy who can sort of shut it down and still be a respectable major leaguer. That's how incredibly talented he is. These last 2 months were a month and a half, unacceptable to the Padres.
Right.
That is what it is. Let's not overreact to that. That's what it is. He's not the only guy in there. He does happen to be the only $300 million man
there. I mean, you would have expected more. So obviously going forward, they need what they got from the first 4 months, and obviously even a little bit more would help, but that's what they need going forward. What they need out of the shortstop next year is more than 84 games, which is, I think, what the final total was for Fernando Tatis Jr. He was easily their best player. He was the most exciting player. I still don't think he would have won Rookie of the Year, although it would have been close. Alonso having over 50 home runs would have been pretty hard for voters to ignore. But who knows what Tatis would have done in the last 6 or 7 weeks as well. But beyond that, that's meaningless anyway. He was special, and I guess the only question about him really is, can he stay healthy? Because this is 2 years in a row now that once in the minors and once in the majors where, you know, he suffered an injury in the summer that knocked him out, or at least kept him to the point where there was no reason to rush him back because of their circumstance. But sort of a long-term injury has cost him the last 2 years. But, you know, look, when he plays, there's no one I'd rather watch on the field.
And that, I say, would be the only thing. The reason that we could say that after 1 year is the way that he got better, the way that he adjusted, the way that his weaknesses, you know, were exposed, the few that there are, and he, you know, was able to bounce back right away. There is no question of the talent and the baseball ability of, because those two things can be different, you know, his ability as a player. That's why it was laughable. I don't mean that as an insult, but it was typical naivete of youth where Fernando Tatis Jr. said that he would not be changing the way he plays. Yes, he will. Not the way he plays when a game's on the line in the first inning and all the things that make him special, but the little things that you do in meaningless innings at the end of games. And certainly the Padres will pick and choose where to play this guy and when to pull him out. But you don't go 100% every second. You just don't. Now, there's a balance between Manny Machado and Fernando Tatis Jr.
Right.
But the veterans knew. This isn't me saying this. This is coaches. This is his former manager. This is people in other organizations. And this is veteran players saying there will be, because every player adjusts to how they survive. And that's a huge part of being a really good major leaguer, is learning how to survive a major league season.
Right.
That's it.
Right. And they need to, you know, a situation where if he plays 130 games or whatever, you know, if he misses, I think if you miss one game a week, you're in about 135 territory, something like that. So that's where they need, you're not going to get 162 out of Tatis. That shouldn't be the goal. The goal should be to give him a day.
145.
Give him a day. 145 would be fine. Like I said, 135 means one game a week. If you get up to 145, that's even better. But that's the sort of range that I would think that you would want to get out of him. Let's be honest, he has to prove that he can do that. I mean, that he can play that many games in a season. So
I'm not second guessing them, because they were very careful with them. But there was a point where, until Manny passed it at one time, when he came back, they were very careful with him. Remember how people were ripping him? Why isn't Tatis playing?
And
they were very careful. But then he went on a stretch, and I believe it was the middle of June to his injury, middle of June to his injury, late June, 48 games in a row he started.
Right, and that shouldn't happen, right. and that's on the organization to be smarter.
And they learn
to
too. Everybody learns.
Right.
So there you go.
Well, speaking of the organization and having to do things, positions 7, 8, and 9, right now. Is there any?
I like that you're going to take those together because they play off each other.
They do, and that's the thing. I mean, when you've got, just to mention some. You have Will Myers, who's a case all by himself. You've written a lot about him. We've talked about him a lot. I don't think we have to spend that much time on him today because we've spent so much time on him previously. Will Myers is going to make a lot of money. Is he tradable? Who knows? If he is, how much money are you going to have to eat? Are you going to just eat it anyway? How much can you count on Will Myers? It's all a gigantic mystery to everyone, including Will Myers. Manuel Margot, Hunter Renfro, Franchy Cordero, Josh Naylor,
Nick Martini.
Nick Martini. I'm not even going to really throw Travis Jankowski in there because he's not. I'm talking about who are the starters and where are you going to find impact players? Because right now, the Padres don't really have a difference maker. The thing I wanted to mention: the Padres need difference makers. Fernando Tatis Jr. is a difference maker. Manny Machado, when he's Manny Machado, is a difference maker. There are not a lot of other difference makers on this team. Eric Hosmer can be sometimes. Hunter Renfroe was for a while this year. Is there anyone else that's a difference maker on this team? And that's where, outside of the pitching staff, that's where the Padres need to improve. They need to have guys that when they, we've talked about this before, when they come up, you better be in your seat because you don't know what's going to happen. And most of the time this year, what you saw was somebody striking out.
If they get one quasi-difference maker, all right, if they get one guy mm-hmm. in the outfield that's like that, okay, that, let's say, Will Myers for 1 month here and 1 month there. If they get a guy like that in the outfield, then Manuel Margot and Hunter Renfroe, it changes their reality. It changes when they can play, which type of pitchers they face. It makes them seem better overall to everyone when really they're just still the same players that can only do what they do but aren't asked to do it against pitchers who they have virtually no chance of succeeding against.
Right, right.
So that's where I was happy that you took it 7, 8, 9. It's like they were unable / unwilling to, and it takes all parties, to complete a trade in the offseason or in the season before the trade deadline for an impact outfielder. Based on what other teams were asking for, where the Padres were at, like, is it really worth it for us to do this now? They knew as well as you and I did that this year wasn't the year. But now it's the search is on for that player and probably a left-handed bat because it's sort of ridiculous how they haven't had that.
Right.
So that changes everything. Manuel Margot could be a valuable trade piece to some teams because as I've talked about before, that guy has some incredible strengths and some incredible weaknesses. And maybe another team says, we can use Manuel Margot. We can put him in the right positions.
Right, right. So, I would say that getting that guy that you just talked about, to me, that's their top priority. To me, that's even bigger than a starting pitcher right now because they need a guy who's out there for 140 or 150 games a year making a difference. And that's based on the situation and where they have guys at certain positions. Outfield, I mean, unless you were going to get a catcher and they missed out on Real Muto, so there's really nobody else I would think that's in that category. So they need an outfielder that can be a difference maker. That's where they need to find somebody. And I don't know if you agree, but I would make that their highest priority in the offseason.
I believe it was their highest priority. I mean, Noah Syndergaard gets the, you know, and that was for real, and the Mets just weren't really willing to deal based on what they were asking for. Outfield was where they had their hand in the most different possible trades. And it turned out they went because they weren't willing to part with some guys. They went with Taylor Trammell because that's the future. And hey, that is the kind of player we want. Left-handed bat on base, blah, blah, for the future. But they had many other things, some I know about, some I don't, that uh-huh. they were trying to get major league outfielders. And so I believe that's going to be a renewed and kind of tweaked effort where they're willing to give up more because they have to give up more to get that player for next year. That became painfully obvious. They had to trade Franmil Reyes. That was not the answer. But you know, him being gone showed that no one else here is the obvious answer. And I'm a huge Hunter Renfroe guy. And Hunter Renfroe deserves a lot of credit for certain improvements he's made, especially on the field. And I think you're going to look up at the end of the year and take a guy who hits 35 homers. But, you know, you can't have a guy who had the second half of the season he had. And we'll find out next year, won't we, as far as how much of it had to do with injury.
Exactly.
So Nick Martini, all he showed him was, hey, look at that left-handed bat that has plate discipline and can get on base. That's not their answer. Is that a guy who could be in their outfield? Sure, at certain times. He's not a Travis Jankowski replacement because he doesn't have speed and he's not really good defensively. So That's not an answer there. I'm fascinated by the fact that this guy came in and he's one of their best hitters in terms of the way that he goes about his at-bats, but he's not your starting left fielder for, you know, 150.
Josh Naylor, trade piece?
That is absolutely a possible trade piece because, man, that kid works so hard. But when you're built like him, when you, you know, look, there's some limitations that you can have that you have in the outfield. So it's a huge trade piece for someone who maybe needs a first baseman or a designated hitter.
Right, right. And then, I mean, who knows? Again, Franchy Cordero, you can't count on
him.
But man, if he could be healthy and be out there, I mean, we've seen the talent he has. We just don't know what to make of it. So,
so amazing. It really is, yeah. But you here's something that contenders cut down on, ifs.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and that's the thing they need. You know, they need to be contenders next year, and so that in that case, they need to fill some of these positions, not with ifs, but with, you know, I mean, look, you're not going to have a lot of certainties, but they need a lot more near certainties than they do question marks. So,
right.
Anyway, we spent about 40 minutes here. Going through that,
that was fun.
We didn't even touch on the fact that they're searching for a new manager.
So that was fun too, actually, because you know,
right. So we'll deal because no matter who they bring in, as we talked about last week, or I guess it was just at the beginning of this week, feels like a long time ago, that it's not going to make a whole lot of difference who the manager is if they don't get some better players. Right now, and so that's why I think it's more important to go through the roster like that and talk about players. And there's still time to talk about the manager, and it would all be speculation at this point. Anyway, informed speculation, to be sure. I'm not knocking you at all, Kevin, but it would be speculation. But so we'll save that for another day. We'll let you get back to writing. We'll have those stories online. Hopefully later today, when people are hearing this, they can then go on and read what you wrote about the position by position. They can read Bryce's column. You'll have more on the weekend, the final weekend of the regular season, and then we will get back on the podcast maybe next week, maybe a couple weeks. At some point, we'll get back on here and we'll talk about what's going on with the team.
Excellent. Thank you, everybody.